All right, welcome back to episode 50 of the Slide In Podcast. Great episode today. We talked about Steelhead for a while, catch and release, morality, Cuba, religion, everything. All right, today's show is brought to you by the Canyon in West Yellowstone, which resides just a few hundred feet from the National Park's entrance. While they're open year-round, the shoulder seasons, April, May, September, October, and even November, the perfect time to visit. My buddy Lucas was up there the other day, got some really nice brown trout swinging. The Madison inside the park, it's now opened year-round, which means you can fish streamers at dawn, then be back in time for a hearty hot breakfast with the family. One of the best parts about the shoulder seasons is to be able to explore the park while the crowds are light and animals are active. Streamer bite tends to be a little more consistent during these months as well. West Yellowstone truly is just such a good jumping-off point for Wyoming, Idaho, and Montana. I mean, there's so much incredible fishing within 2 hours of West. Book your trip at www.yellowstonekellyinn.com. Use promo code SLIDE2025 for 15% off your stay. The Kelly Inn, family-friendly comfort, world-class fishing, all in one spot. Once again, use code SLIDE2025 for 15% off your stay. Thanks to our partners over at the Yellowstone Kelly Inn. All right, enjoy the episode.
Welcome back. I'm Kelly Gallup. Nobody cares about Braden.
True words have never been spoken. This is episode 50 of the Slide In Podcast. What Kelly said. So I hope we're going to have a great show for you today. Depends if Kelly's on his best behavior or not.
If I live through it.
Yeah, you've been on the IR for a while, huh?
Kryptonite shower.
Kryptonite shower, yes. Is that what got you?
Yes.
So you were, what, battling multiple illnesses, and yes. What happened to your ear?
My ear? My ear got, I was riding with Mel, and we were coming off of, went up Indian Creek. I love that trail. And I just brushed up against some branches on a tree, and one of them went into my eardrum.
And that's not fun?
It didn't feel cool, but I reached in, and it didn't, you know, I was like, you know, I'm like, holy shit. But it, and then it started hurting in my jaw and all this stuff. And then woke up with a cold, which was one thing. And then it got pretty bad. And I was like, holy shit. And then I got freaking pink eye. Yeah. They still red?
No.
Should be
no,
gone now. Pretty good. I'm reading about it. Of course, every guy on earth tells me, you know how you get that pink eye? I say, I wish that's how I got it, you dumbass. And I was like, oh my God, I felt terrible about telling my kids, just stop rubbing your eyes. It's the most unbelievable. Shit runs out of your eyes, closes your eyes.
Yeah, it's...
It's gross.
I remember I had it as a kid, and yeah, you wake up and your eyes glued shut.
Yeah, they're glued shut. I had to get up three times one night. God, you know, wiping all this stuff.
Gross.
So I went to the doctor and got some eye drops, you know, I'm wearing gloves everywhere so I don't touch it, you know, and then touch somebody and get them pink eye. Well, that's everybody tells you how contagious it is. With kids, I know, because they're running around grabbing everything. But
you're fucking gross.
So then I went into the doctor and they said, she checks my ears and she goes, you know, your right eardrum's ruptured. I says, oh, cool. Mel says I don't use it anyway. Yeah. And every other woman I've ever known.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Most of your employees.
Yes.
Friends, family, loved ones.
As my ex-wives, think about it. Okay. That was a good 4 days of sitting around doing nothing.
Yeah. Well.
But I couldn't talk. Yesterday, I still couldn't talk. Today.
It's been really nice.
Yeah.
Glad you're feeling better. And glad the pink eye didn't take you down, although that would have been really funny.
Take you down?
I want to go down by a bear death. Yeah, pink eye.
What got him?
One or the other.
Speaking of that, one of my best friends in history died this week, Ray Schmidt. That was tragic.
Sorry to hear that.
Yep, had a complication from surgery. And if y'all don't know Ray, which most of you might, but or a lot of you, you look him up on Facebook. But Ray was Ray and I, we had this great relationship where everybody thought we hated each other. We went to shows together. We roomed together. We drank all night together. We fished together. We started the McKenzie Foundation together for my son. It was like, but we had this thing where we'd talk shit about each other constantly. And everybody thought it was real. And it wasn't, you know, we were like tight as skin on a grape. And tragic, very tragic, but great guy. He's the guy I was telling you, Ray was one of the, he was one of the early guys in the spay thing.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if it was Ray that we were, because we did a steelhead video where we showed single hand techniques. It was on Cascade from Flyfish TV. And we did a video series about it. That's the one where Ray's this giant angry kraut, right? I don't know how tall he was, huge. He's the guy that said, God, you see that fish jump, it went over your head. And he looks down at me and he goes, well, your head. But he's just what a great guy.
That's
but
good stuff.
For those of you who didn't know Ray, you missed out. He was something. I was on the river one day, and a stupid son of a bitch comes down to the river. He's got a suit and tie on. He's guiding. And I'm like, what? Jeez, it's always something, right? He goes, I go, what gives? He goes, the fish aren't respecting me. I thought this might help.
So good.
Only Ray.
That's a really good.
Great at everything he did, man.
Wow, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, what a drag.
Sounds like he's a great guy. All right, well, speaking of the spay thing, I was just over.
You got a fish.
I was in Idaho, and I caught a fish. I caught a couple fish, actually. So I post on Instagram because I am a self-absorbed. All the comments.
That pretty much sums it up, really.
Yeah, we get a lot of comments about people taking fish pictures. I don't know. You know, I think it's cool to be able to remember the fish. We talked about this in an early podcast, but when you do take pictures or videos of fish, you seem to lose your actual memory of it, and you just remember the photos. But my memory's not that good, so I'd actually, it's nice to have photos of some fish. So
I think the argument was more about taking a picture of every fish and mishandling of every fish, because you have to have a.
So
that was your first big one, right?
What? No, I caught fish that big last year.
Oh, that was your first big one.
No, I caught fish that big last year, but this year, I mean, I was over there for 5 days steelheading, and I showed up one evening, nothing, next day, nothing, next day, nothing. Not a grab, not a bump, not a sniff. What's John Stenerson's shirt say? Tug, pull, twang, pluck.
Oh, he's got
all the ones. Yeah. Not an interaction. And then, I get up. I was in the runs real early each morning, fishing till dusk. And so I get into the run early. It's about an hour into the run where I feel like I'm really in the sweet spot, right? And I get this, it's such a cool eat. We're just, I'm fishing a Hardy Marquis, the salmon number 3, and it just, the eat was so soft.
You did see the response from Jake at Hardy, correct?
Marquis?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not fucking calling it that.
Okay, I mean, yeah, the old whatever, company, just whatever.
Don't let the Brits win or whatever. Yeah, I don't care. I'm calling it the Marquis. It sounds better to me.
That's what everybody called it when it was the, they had in the U.S., it's all you ever heard it called.
Was the Marquis or Marquis?
Yeah. No, Marquis.
Marquis, yeah.
Yeah, you never heard it the other way.
Yeah, I don't like it, so I'm not going to do it. And that's
free. Giving you a free
out. I appreciate there. It, yeah. I do appreciate the lesson. So it was really cool to eat because, this giant fish, a lot of time they eat it super soft. And this one, it just, it like, nipped it a couple times, and then it was this really soft pull that just did one click of my reel, and then another click, and then another click, and the whole time I'm just sitting there like, please pull on this thing hard so I can actually lift this rod. And all of a sudden it's just a screaming run downstream, and I saw that fish come up. I have a whole spool of Verivos running line on my reel, which I think is 300 feet, and I got well over the halfway point of that. I was not in like actual backing, but that fish was a couple hundred feet away from me. And then it came out of the water. I'm like, oh God, I'm screwed. It's giant. But fought it, got it back up to me. Landed the fish, big fish, horrible tape job on it. Just really estimates. I'm not even going to offer what I think it was. It's big fish though. So let that one go. And then I went back up to the top of the run because there's no one else in this run, right? If there was someone behind me, I would have bowed out and let them pass me, right? I'm like, I'm going to go back up, swing through again. before I got down to where I was standing. So it was a fish I had previously passed over. I got another fish, another pretty big hen. So I released that fish, you know, took a video of it just all in the water. And also for clarity's sake, I know I said I keep fish out of the water for 4 or 5 seconds when I take a video of them. Well, I was alone on this one, so I set my phone up on a rock with the first big one. And in the interest of honesty and transparency, that fish was out of the water for 9 seconds. And so, and to me, it felt really short. And I went back and like actually timed it, broke down how long it was out. And I was like, okay, I could probably do better than that. So in the interest of honesty and transparency, probably not my best.
Don't you the guy that wanted to kick the guy's ass that was doing that last week?
Well, yeah, but his was out of the water for 2 fucking minutes. I was trying to get mine
okay.
in.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I'm better than him. Trust me. I'm, you know, rules are for thee and not for me.
Yes.
So then, you know, the rest of the time this fish is in the water, the second one I didn't take out of the water at all. So I let that one go. And then I just, you know, at this point I'm like, oh man, that's my best day of steelheading I've ever had. Well, I'm just going to go stand right where I was, work line back out, and go through this run one more time. So I went back to those rocks on my third cast. I got a third fish. And I took no photos of that fish. Partly because I grabbed the leader and went to tail it and it popped off and swam away. But so that was my morning. So my question there, and then, you know, I fished another 2 days. I got one more grab late that last day. Mm-hmm. How irregular is that?
Not at all.
That's
just tells you fish you're going to eat when the fish are going to eat.
Yeah. So I was just there in a bite.
And you pass a lot of fish always. Yeah.
That's the confidence part of swinging for steelheads hard, because it's like, I heard this on I think Tracy Allen was on the River Rambler podcast, and they're talking about how neither of them really like saltwater fishing. And the guy, the saltwater guy's like, oh, it's so hard what we do. He goes, no, it's not. You see every fish you throw at.
Yeah.
I think Tracy's line was, I'm out here swinging for ghosts. I don't even know if they're there.
Scotty Hall, that's what Scotty Hall's video was, chasing ghosts or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's just what it is. You know, you'll have in a swing world, I mean, when you're nymphing like we did in Michigan, but we did both, but you just got used to that's what you do when you swing, right?
I got to put in here real quick is that was the first steel I'd ever caught on a fly I tied, and it was pretty much an exact copy of Bucky McCormick's Lucky Bucky.
Just nice. So you did that little one?
What's that?
That's the one you ran that
it
little
was
one?
Size 2.
Yeah.
And that's nice. What they ate. Yeah, it was cool. Nice.
Yep. Yeah, I remember I told you don't be afraid to throw that. But yeah, that's just what it is. I remember guys when back in the, I don't know what decade it was, 80s or 90s, and guys were showing up in BC and they were egging.
Like nymphing them or swinging them?
Nymphing
them, yeah.
And it was gross.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody's like, and it's one of those things. I mean, it's like we were talking about something else, fishing beds. It's not illegal, right. But it's highly immoral. I mean, yeah. So it's like you go to, you know, you're on the Dean or the Kispiax or the Copper or whatever river you're on. I don't care. Bulkley, you could, if you wanted to go and nymph those runs, but you're asking if you're fishing a style that's proper to our way of thinking, and you're asking the fish a lot out of the fish to come and get that fly.
Especially from that run is deep and fast in the middle, and those fish, I know their lie is under that giant water.
Sure.
They always eat it either in the giant water or just off it. So I've got fish in that run before, and I'm throwing a size 2 traditional on a floating line, floating leader. I mean, I think that fly is skipping at times.
Remember that fly that Mike was showing us?
Yeah.
That big that he fishes almost exclusively?
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a half inch. I mean, it looks like a little caterpillar. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah.
Jerry's screaming at us right now. You stupid.
Something special.
Yeah.
Named after one of the rivers, right?
No. That's now the dry fly that they're fishing all the time. I can't remember the name. It's black, basically. It's that big.
Huh.
And, but it's, you're just, you know, it's the difference. This is, you know, we could do this about virtually every sport, every aspect of it. It's just the difference. It's like when Kirk Kruger and I were talking, and we were doing the Sage thing, and when Tommy was here, and we got on this thing about Euro, and then we got onto this other thing, and blah, blah, blah.
Was this like a preseason meeting or something?
Yeah, it was last week. And he kind of goes, and everyone comes to this. There's the Angler's Prayer that Robert Trevor wrote, that, you go from wanting to catch a fish to a lot of fish to the biggest fish, and then you just want to
just
catch
fun.
The fish on your terms,
yeah.
Right? And that's what swinging is.
Right.
I mean, it was just, you know, I mean, a great day used to be, you know, and still to this day, you know, real steelheaders, if they get a grab or a fish a day, that's all great, you know. That's just good. No problem with that.
Right.
But then you do go out and have that, you know, 8, 10, 12 fish day once a year maybe, or once a lifetime for some people. I don't know. I mean, you have those days, but it's just what you've set yourself up to fish a specific style. What I was getting at with Kurt said, I just, at this point in the game, if it doesn't put its head up, I don't want to fish for it anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like, great. I mean, I'm the same way in the summer. I mean, everybody says, oh, every day in the shop, how many times do you hear people say, oh, were you streamer fishing last night? Not exactly.
No.
And, you know, and I tell them about the rules and, you know, all that stuff. But it's just what you decide to do. But it's not uncommon. I think one of my best days on the Dean, I got six fish, and I'll bet you I got those fish and didn't get anything in the morning. I broke for lunch, and then I got six in maybe an hour and a half.
Yeah.
All skate and dries, right?
So cool.
Just wide open. We call it the six pack now.
Yeah.
Just above the, and, you know, then you might go 3 days without a sniff.
Right.
It's okay.
Yeah.
That's what memories are made for.
That's what it is.
If you don't have one, take your picture.
And you
sit and stare at your phone while you should be fishing.
Right. That's what Tracy Allen, I think he was in that same podcast, he's talking about, like, guys who are numbers guys. And even, this is steelhead to steelhead angler, right? Somebody went up to BC, and I think he's talking about why he loves the clear water so much, specifically. See, you know, guys go up to BC and come back, and they go, oh my God, it was incredible. Caught 27 fish in one day. And he goes, what was number 11 like?
Yeah.
it's a more
27?
Unique and, like, meaningful experience when you get one or you get two. So I'm not necessarily...
I remember the name of the run. I don't remember one of the fish, but I remember the first one that ate a dry fly.
Yeah.
On the six pack. I wasn't on the six pack. I was in the giant, my first one. But remember every single thing... If I could paint, I could paint you the color of the water.
You can paint?
Yeah, it's paint by numbers. If I could paint, you would, every single thing, the bulge, the take, the reel, the grind, everything.
Yep.
Not one second I don't remember. It's where I was standing exactly.
So, yeah.
And some guy came in and told me that run blew out. It's not as good as it used to be. I'm like, ooh, tragic. But it just means there's another one somewhere. But the, 27. Wow.
It's probably hyperbole, but the guy said there's enough.
Somebody's got it.
And I've heard, like, Kevin from Squalla Catch, I can't remember what his number was. They caught like 40 fish in a day or something.
That's him and his son.
Yeah.
I think they're high. We'd have to ask him.
It was Kevin something insane. I mean, it was a huge.
Yeah, but there's a cat number that goes up that, you know, he's up there more than most.
Yeah, well, he's
British
up there
Columbia
for the
people.
One greatest day ever. He's also been there on a lot of days.
Well, he goes up for like almost 6 weeks a year.
Yeah.
Takes a boat up and, you know, fishes. Yeah. Now that was on the Deschutes. He had that big day. Mm. He had one on the Bulkley too. But yeah, but that's one out of, you know, and he's been doing it forever. He's great at it. I mean,
yeah.
That's still, but. If you quit because steelheading because you didn't catch enough fish and you weren't supposed to be in that sport anyway.
No, that's not the...
Right?
No. I mean,
You really should take up Euro.
I got my ass kicked the last few days there. I finally got a grab late in that day. And the whole time, like, I said I was going to leave at, you know, noon. And I'm like, okay, I'll leave at 2. Okay, I'll leave at 4. Like, it's just... I like getting my ass kicked there. Like, it's just, it's that hunt. It's so addicting. And I don't know. So that's not a rare thing. It's essentially
no. It's when your bite comes on.
When there was a bite,
the bite comes on, and that's for all fishing in the world.
Right.
All fishing in the world. When the bite comes on, you know. I was just watching a bass tournament two days ago. Whatever today is. What day is today? What's today?
Friday? Sunday.
Oh yeah. It was Saturday. I was watching it, and the guy was talking about your bite windows. He says, you know, you got to be A-gaming when a steelhead bite comes on, generally the whole river comes on.
Yeah.
It's the same everywhere in the world.
That's why I remember being over there last year, and Johnny's over there, and I got a fish that morning and a fish that evening. One other grab in the middle of the day, and Johnny landed two that day. And I was texting him, you know, hey, I got two. How'd you do today? He says, I got two as well. Must have been a grabby day.
Yeah.
And I think, you know,
they're actually moving to the fly. They're moving.
Right.
Imagine how many times that fly goes past fish. And they only on a, and streamers, nymphs, dry. Okay. Not as much with a nymph, but.
Then they just decide to eat.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody's a hero. So you're a hero, little buddy.
Well, for today. So kind of on that note, I was texting Chris on Instagram last night, and he sent me photos of this guy, Midnight Sun Custom Flies. Ties some super cool bugs. That's one of them there. But he just ties some, like, really pretty classics.
Oh, yeah.
I believe he does... Looks I believe like you real, can order flies.
It's like real seal, too.
Yeah, and I have no idea who this guy is, but I've just looked at
Midnight Sun?
Midnight Sun, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, he does a bunch of cool bugs. I think he does custom orders. So check him out. But he sent me one. And then Chris asked me, how do you feel about classic flies tied on shanks? And I said, I don't like how they look. I'm sure they increase your hookup ratio, having a hook at the very back for like those nippy kind of eats that steelhead do. And he goes, yeah, I'm curious about doing that for the hookup, but the Alec Jackson hooks just look way too cool. I said, yeah, they do look good, blah, blah, blah. What do you think about like tubes, fishing classic flies tied on tubes? And he said, essentially, I'm not sure I want to catch them that bad to stray away from the classic hook. And I essentially said, yeah, I agree. I think it matters what you catch them on. And I think, you know, everybody is somewhere different kind of in that journey. Like, I'm at the point where I kind of care what fly they eat and, like, how that fly is constructed. And I feel like I'm just starting
You're pretty young in it to be so cocky.
Well, I don't think it's cocky.
But I'm the same way.
I don't think it's a cocky thing. I think it's a...
Well, I mean...
It's a
arrogant thing, whatever you want to call it, but you got your rules.
Huh? Yeah, I think it's particular. I don't think it's cocky or arrogant. I think it's intentional.
Whatever. Yeah, you're right. It's you want to do it on your rules.
Yeah.
I remember certain flies showing up in the 80s and people weren't digging them, and they were too much when the foam showed up, and then when this showed up and the tubes and the mm-hmm. Everybody had an opinion about it, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's got a... Most of them probably went out and caught one on it and said, okay, that was easy or better or worse, but who knows, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's the same with streamers. Like when we articulated streamers, every stupid moron out there had to have a... Everybody's got to have a comment. I forget what I was looking up. I was looking up something the other day about... Might have been a new leg press machine or something that was like... Everybody's got a comment about everything, right? Don't care what it is. It can be a cooking.
You got to have an opinion.
Yeah. You got to voice it. Like mm-hmm. That teacher that was in here said that she had a sign in her class that says, it's okay to have an opinion. You don't share. You know, just shut up, right? Yeah. Who gives a fuck?
It's ironic coming from two guys on a podcast.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just like, you just go through what you decide. I like to throw classic looking flies.
Yeah.
I do.
It's cool.
But I've fished one of the first places I ever fished a heifer groomer mm-hmm. was on the Dean.
Whoa.
They ate the living shit out of it.
Yeah.
Black heifer groomer. Huh. Articulated.
Big one?
Huh? Yeah, the big one. Wow. They ate the living shit. I got one from me to you in front of Mike swinging in front of him. And it just blew it up. He is pissed. Heck. But what I started to say was, when I did the articulated flies, every guy out there said that's a braining hook.
Yeah.
Ooh, you need to do a little bit of looking around to see how that would possibly brain a fish. And it was like the dumbest shit I ever heard of in my life, that a fish comes in, he's going to get brained.
I think the only brain with big hooks are like really little fish. It's a physics thing, right? With the
you'd
long
have to
chain.
Go that far into that fish's head to get that hook in there. Good luck with that.
Yeah. But like a fish
way
like
back,
this big.
Yeah.
It might be able to do that. But
yeah,
not
you might break him in half setting the hook too, but that's just part of the game.
Yeah.
But we didn't. But the point is, it's just like there's always some. But yet, some of the most, and I'll see those guys. Harry Lemire, I talked about that the other day, where he said, "What were you fishing, young man?" And I said, I showed him my sculpin thing, and he says, "That's good," but he hated the popsicle. Guy tried classic Atlantic salmon flies, for Christ's sakes. It's like a clown car blows up in a paint factory. Poof. It's like, what the is this, right?
Yeah.
And so, but that's okay because it's a classic. And so the popsicle wasn't okay, which was fine with me. I kind of dig when there's all these opinions like this. I kind of think it's fun.
Well, it's
it's just,
this is why I enjoy talking to you about things, anything in the world, is because it's, sometimes we disagree on stuff.
We agreed on something once?
Yeah, one time, I think. But it's interesting. It's fun to talk to people that you disagree with, because one, you can learn something new. They might learn something new. You might both learn something. But that's a conversation. Like, I don't like just talking to people I agree with on everything. It's boring.
Well, I've never met that person, so...
Neither is my brother. He is such a contrarian. It's unbelievable.
But yeah, that's, I don't know. You know, everybody, who cares how you throw? Who cares what? I mean, what I didn't dig is when I started hearing the guys were coming in and sore mouthing all the fish. It was on the Bulkley, the guys where I was talking, and they were an infinite. And they were having these massive days running egg flies and shit like that. And I was like, oh, God. The only thing I was saying is totally selfish. That's yeah. If they stick six fish in a run, that's six fish I ain't got a shot at, because I'm probably going to get a shot at one.
Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that really cuts my numbers down. So it's pretty selfish on my behalf, but.
Yeah, totally.
Well, but it's, you know, there's just.
I mean, it's like this, when I go swing up in the park, I can't help it, but I have this just hate for anyone that is nymphing in there. And it's a selfish thing. It's,
and you used to nymph it.
They're going to catch a bunch of giant
fish.
You
used to nymph it.
No, I never nymphed the park.
Oh, you didn't?
No. No. I've nymphed like three times since I moved out here.
Hmm.
A few more than that. That's an under-exaggeration. But every time I'm up there, and if I see anyone nymphing, it just like, it pisses me off. It's a selfish thing, because I know that they have a way better chance at catching the fish I want to. Like, mm-hmm. They might go in a hole and, like you said, catch a bunch of big fish, whereas I'm going to have a chance of one or two.
It's kind of like the Barnes pool.
That's,
I mean,
exactly,
they swing it and they step
it
up.
That's done now. Nobody swings that hole anymore, because it's chock full of nymphers from Utah.
Really?
It's unbelievable. I was up there a lot.
The rotation's dead?
No, they're still rotating, just really slowly. And there's some people, I think the common courtesy is in there. It's like, if you get a good fish, get out of the run and let somebody else come down. There's a lot of people that don't abide by that. But at the same time, I did see a swinger the other day. I was up there and... there's a bunch of nymphers going through, and I just went in there, have a beer, sitting at the porch. I was coming back from fishing further into the park, and so I'm having a beer, and this swinger shows up, and he like is racing to put his waders on, and he just pulls the sock out of the tube and throws his giant backpack on. By the way, he's just fishing Barnes Hole. He's got a huge backpack. And he races down. There's two nymphers in the run. He races down to the bottom of the run and starts setting his rod up. He walks out in the water to set his rod up in the lower half of the run, low-holing those guys.
Mm.
And I was like, this is very nymph behavior from a swinger. And so I was, you know, I had one beer and decided to be chippy because I had a hood on and I had my hat low and my sunglasses, and I felt anonymous, you know. And I was talking to a couple nymph guys at the table. We were hanging out, and I go, loud enough that the guy could hear me. I go, "What the hell is that guy doing?" And I see his head snap around. I don't know. I was trying to teach through shame, which, call me an asshole,
make whatever. Your nose bleed.
What's that?
That can make your nose bleed.
Yeah, I was really close to my car. I got to jump right in there. Got out. No, he's a swinger, Kelly. What is he going to do?
Oh, God. Help me. What have I raised?
I'll talk shit and run away. Tell me what you want. All right, let's jump to a new comment.
we haven't got to a comment.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, thank you.
So this one comes from my favorite Tight Lines Northwest, who he actually didn't end this comment with tight lines, which is the first time he's
done that. A lot of guys are. He's probably doing just.
I get 10 emails a day being like, solve the riddle, asshole. And yeah, tight lines. All right, you're the dork, dude. This guy's not a dork. He probably picked that name back when he was a child, I hope. But he asked good questions, so I'm going to read this one. He says, "I have a couple thoughts that are very, very likely to prove unpopular. Let's assume selective gear rules apply. Here in Washington, that means a single barbless hook, no bait, no scent, and knotless nets. What percentage of large trout that are caught and released do you believe will survive the interaction? I say specifically large because they're the most photogenic. My unpopular take is that we should put a bag limit on catch and release fish. Do we really need to poke 30, 40, 50 fish? Pick a river system, calculate fish per mile, time of year, water temp. We could get to catch 10 a day, hopefully 9 live, or 8 or 15, depending on the health of the system. This circles back to fishing for coho. Generally, we can't bonk wild coho, and a coho salmon is difficult to release well when trolling in the ocean. I believe many, probably most of them, die regardless of how hard you try to take care of them. We could catch 5 wild coho and 2 hatchery fish, but we probably killed 6 of the 7 fish.
Trolling, yeah.
So what do you think about that, of putting a bag limit on catch and release?
We'd have to self-regulate it, and people do that already.
Yeah.
I mean, I do.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen it a number of times where people are just absolutely roping and they put the rod down.
I get 3 fish a night.
Yeah.
Right. Period. But I don't think that you kill very many at all in the river. I don't think I kill very many. I land them very quickly.
I don't think you kill a lot of fish. You're very good at handling them.
Then it's just
quick
on, off, get the hook out. Not a lot of grabbing and flashing, you know, flopping on them and all the shit that goes on. But I've grown up from the beginning of this, you know, through catch and release when it wasn't catch and release. It was started out as don't kill your limit, limit your kill. And then it was total non, everything had to be released, right? Mm-hmm. And so, I just don't see bass, pike, trout. I don't see them dying. And
so that's what I was wondering. Okay. I sorry to cut you off. I wanted to ask you this question. I think it relates. We always talk about how, you know, if fish were dying, we'd see them. Well, these fish that die of natural causes, right? They don't all just grow to be 30 inches. They die at some point, you know, like what do you think the average, like, natural size of a fish is at their natural death?
Probably 2 foot would be pushing it.
So,
and that's a 6-7 year old fish, and the ten's a big one.
18 to 24
The hens can live
inches,
longer. Like, yeah, somewhere in there, probably.
Somewhere in their natural life cycle range. So, like, when
you go out and you look in the channels right now, and there's, you know, every channel in this river's got a bajillion spawners in it.
Yeah.
And how many in this river, which is, it's a free stony type river. It's not, it's tailwater, but to see one of those, you get on the big rivers and you'll see bigger fish but there was a study done by somebody, I think it was in Fly Fisherman, and you never know who writes this shit, but it said 4 out of 10 fish touched would die. Mm-hmm. If that was even close to true on this river, you would see fish everywhere.
But so that's what I'm getting at, is like, why don't we see fish dead in this river, given, like, even the ones dying from natural causes? Like, why don't we see dead fish? Because they're not just living for eternity. Mm-hmm. Like, they're dying at some point. Yeah. And why don't we see them?
Well, trout decomposes pretty quickly, but you'd still see, if you see one when it's dead,
yeah.
Most of them die in the, you know, late fall and early spring.
So it's when there's just not a lot of people.
Harshness. Same thing with a whitetail. You don't see many whitetails dying in the summer. But at the end of a rut.
Mowed down by a motorcycle.
Yeah, end of the rut and you've screwed yourself to death or your hyperphagy come off of a type, you know, you go either coming out of spawn or going into spawn in the spring, right? Yep. I mean, the brown trout spawn right now.
Yep.
And that can go way into December and even January, some places even later, right? And then that's when you'll see, if you fish in the winter a lot, like
that's
we did in Michigan or here,
fish.
You'll see fish dying a lot.
Okay,
you
that
know?
Makes sense, yeah.
And you'll see them, and in the spring you'll see them when they're coming off the early spawn, you know, March, April. April's done usually, but I mean, you see that really heavy spawn, that's when you see the fish kind of woo.
Yeah.
And so theoretically your summer fish, which is another reason that we should have freaking seasons,
yeah.
You know, but if everybody was as worried about this as they put on their cloak of, you know, righteousness to talk about killing fish, then you wouldn't be out there. Then I wouldn't see those 200 son of a bitches up there on those fucking spawning beds right now.
Yeah.
If they were quite as righteous as we talk about.
Right.
But they, you know, I had a guy in my front yard yesterday or 2 days ago. Hey, can you not fish that? You know, don't fish those shiny spots. He was really cool.
Yeah.
He goes, what? He goes, they just keep scattering. I said, yeah, it's because you're in their bedroom.
Why do you think they keep coming back?
Yeah, they just keep running back here, but they don't bite us. Yeah, just. But I mean, at any rate, I don't think it's nearly what people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
You almost say that hesitantly because if you tell people, yeah, then they're going to start being even bigger dumbasses handling them. But self-regulating catch and release, I just think you just do.
Yeah.
You just do. I mean, it's when, you know, the way we fish for trophies so much. We don't catch a lot of fish.
No, we've been in the boat together a lot.
Yeah.
We have very few, like, big numbers days of fish. And it's kind of how my personal fishing is too, right?
Yeah, and it like I do in the summer where I'll just go out. Other than that, I know I haven't done that in 2 years either. But I used to go out in Euro to set a record to see what the record I could do that year was. 63 in an hour and 45 minutes, including 17 minutes of travel time. And then you're like, okay, that was fun and stupid. So that was no fun at all, really. It was right. Just like go. But I don't know how you would, who was the guy that asked the question?
Tight lines Northwest.
Tight line. I don't know how, it's a great theory, but then you got the Gestapo watching each other. You got people, you know, calling the cops that he caught 43 fish and he didn't quit fishing. I mean, just self-regulate. And there's no way, this question will never get answered. It's like, we're just never going to agree on this. Yeah. No one ever is. And everybody's going to cheat. That's what we do. And, you know, I haven't fished in 2 weeks. So that means if I get 40 fish, I get 480.
Yeah.
You know, because if I should be fishing this many days a week. But
right.
I think it's a great thing to just instill in people. But I think, at least in my generation, it's already been instilled in people. I mean, we all grew up through the catch and release and, you know, but I like the way it started better when we had creel limits.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not opposed to creels either. I'm not opposed to killing fish.
Yeah.
But I would say like you can catch, you'd have a slot limit thing, right? You'd say if you were going to do that. I'm not big one way or the other. I'm truly not. Rather, if we had a slot limit, I don't think that. In reality, if what the, whoever the people who said that every fourth fish, 4 out of 10 fish die if you touch them, well, if we had a slot limit and you could only keep one, you would go home. you'd have your fish, right? Yes. So you'd probably kill less.
Right.
Unless you left it open to catch and release, which is where that's where it all started. It was never catch and release everything. It was don't kill your limit, limit your kill. So then you say, okay, well, where are you going to put that word? Well, then you got trophy hunting. Do you want to just get the big ones? Well, we like the big ones there because we got this idea they're going to come and eat our dry fly, which they aren't really going to. And so there's just so many loopholes in it.
Yeah.
If you can just say to, if you just regulate yourself, that's all you can do, because they say 3% of all crime is done by, all crime is done by 3% of people in the world. It's no different than fishing.
Yeah.
I mean, what would it take to have you go out and spear a freak? I saw this post on Facebook while I was sitting dying, hacking my guts out, and some guy in the Dakotas shot a state record. I'm not sure this wasn't clickbait, but I don't think so. Shot a state record bow shot brown trout. 400, I had to read them. Every one of them. Oh, these guys, you ride a bicycle without a seat. Oh, there was a million of them. There's, you know, what kind
of... That's good stuff.
But it's not a game species. Right. Not considered a game species in these impoundments that are 100% stocked and stuff. And I mean, 95% of the people were saying, you're a worthless piece of shit. You killed this fish. And then there's guys saying, well, it's legal. It's not a game fish. They're stocked fish.
Right.
And again, legislate. Don't bitch. Legislate. Go and fight it in the, you know, get it passed. Get something passed.
So why would you ever do anything when you could just comment on something on Facebook?
Yeah, that's true. You know, there's your voice. Yeah. Everybody heard it under an anonymous.
Why would you ever actually try to change something when you can call someone gay on Facebook?
Oh, God, that's they just beat it up, right? But I don't know. I like what he's talking about.
No seat comments, hilarious. That's really good.
Oh, yeah.
Steal
and
that
you
one.
Pull out so you can finish yourself. There was a bunch of them.
Oh, God.
There was a bunch of those guys on there, but. This has been going on since, you know, when Lee Wolf, as far as I don't, there's probably, and it's been going on, there's always been people. I mean, Ray Bergman, way before, I mean, they caught what they wanted.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if they were going to eat them. And in some cases, maybe just showing off. I don't know. But they didn't kill every single fish. I mean, some places did. I'm reading this book right now about how this state became what it is and their conservation stuff. And they're talking about, you know, people rolling 100. They could dynamite and poison our rivers.
Yeah.
So it was just no.
Who was telling me about that? They were killing pike somewhere.
Oh, yeah. People do.
Yeah. It was definitely somewhere in northeast Montana.
Yeah, they dynamite them and blah, blah,
God,
blah.
I can't remember who's telling me this.
But I mean, if you go back in time when it started and you just, all you were saying is be ethical. Mm-hmm. Just. And if like tight lines talking about catching, you know, I don't think I kill fish. I don't, and that could, you know, maybe I've got this giant dinosaur ego. I don't know. But I just don't see them swim away. And I've caught so many fish twice in the same night.
That's what I was going to talk about is Andrew, one of our guides, has caught this fish that he dubbed Hailstorm Harry. It's the first time he got it was in this massive hailstorm.
Four times now?
I think maybe even more than that. But
well, he hasn't, but somebody else has caught it and saw the
picture.
Somebody
caught it.
It was during streamer school.
It's on the same rock, and he's caught it 2 years ago was the first time he saw it. And it was like 21 and a half then, and it's up to 23 inches now.
Yeah.
Like the first time, his point was the first time they got that fish, I think he was holding it, and it was a miserable day, right? The hailstorm day. Super cold out, and he's wearing, I think, wool gloves and holding the fish.
Oh, yeah, that'll get you some shit on.
Well, and I reposted on our Instagram account. I didn't even, you know, look at it closely. I was probably drunk, high, something, asleep, I don't know. But I just see this, like, giant fish. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Yeah, repost that. And then there's all this hate. You know, I put my phone down, come back, and I see all these messages. Your guide shouldn't be wearing gloves or something. And so he walked in the shop the next day. I'm like, I didn't know you were wearing fucking gloves, dude. And he, like, clearly the comments had got to him because he was hot. He's like, it's not a big deal, blah, 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 blah. And then next year he catches that fish again, and he had a little spite post on Instagram. Like, everybody was pissed at me for this. Like, this fish survived. It's healthy. It's bigger.
I think right now it's 4 times caught.
Yeah. I think he's got it 4 times.
I think he's got it 3, and somebody else got it the 4th.
Unless he caught it 1 week apart this year.
Okay.
He got on a salmon flight
that
twice.
That would be a 4.
Yeah. His clients. I say yeah. His clients. Yeah.
I think somebody at Streamer School got it too.
Yeah.
But it might have been another one. There's another one you guys got some screwy name for too. But it's definitely the same fish.
Yeah.
But that fish was caught the week before.
And if people doubt this, by the way, just for some who might not know, fish spot patterns are like fingerprints. They're all 100%.
Their gill plate is.
Yeah.
Their gill plate is a complete.
Yeah. But even as you run down their like tail, you know, random spots.
If you could do that, but it's a lot easier on a gill plate.
And it's got to be the same side of the fish, obviously. That's where some people, I think, forget.
I'm going to get a bajillion guys right in. I tailed fish with gloves all my life and never saw. You and I got in an argument about this. I never saw
That's because I showed up with a water bottle that had a sticker on it that said cancel tailing gloves.
Yeah.
That was a purist on the fly sticker. Shout out to him again.
Yeah, I recall we used I used jersey gloves, I think, just because my hands were freezing all the time. And they're just kind of fuzzy gloves, mm-hmm. You know? And I tailed 10 million freaking steelhead and salmon. Salmon nobody gives a shit about, but they're dying anyway. But and I've never seen one with a mark. But and I remember it's because he had another comment in there about knotted nets. Yep. He also used a bajillion knotted nets. That's all you had in the old days. And then we used linen nets like docks up there. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you for certain I've net the same trout half a dozen times in a summer that you know just like that one where you you know it's, there it is, same fish every
give it
time
a name.
But and then people are saying, well, there's nylon nets. Well, that would to me would be even less harmful because they're, I mean, it seems rougher, but it's not really sticking to anything. Wet nylon isn't. And then but again, I'm all for if and then people always tell me, there's proof of this. And I'm like, yeah, well, show me the proof of 4 out of 10 fish died that were touched. I don't know where this shit came. I remember reading it in Fly Fishing or something once, and I was like, this is such a crock of shit. They're a lot more hardy than we give them credit. And, you know, at some point, you should just, if that shit bothers you, you should just stop fishing. You know, go join Greenpeace and do something else. But you should just stop fishing completely because right. It's a fucking blood sport. Yeah. And if you don't like that, you need to. Somebody wrote to me, or can't, it was an email about using. He met a guy in the river fishing. I hope this wasn't one of your questions, but he saw a guy fishing with these beautiful flies. He showed him boxes of flies. It was an email to me. I wanted to bring it up because we'll just do it now. I don't know who it was. And he says, have you ever heard of such a thing? Well, it's very old. One of my buddies, Bob Shaw, fished a hook that he bought that had little BBs on the end of them. And he wanted to go like this and get that thunk, thunk, and be done. And Bob did it for years. Mm-hmm. And then Scotty Howell, the guy that fishes no hooks for steelhead.
Yep.
Well, I mean, Jesus, it's, you know, do what you want to do, but you don't have to condemn every single person and make these rules up so that just try to, you know, get your club to say, let's just limit our kill. Let's, like, it started out. We start with great ideas and then they get just blown up out of shit. Don't touch the fish with a, you know, there was a glove hand. It was a little mesh thing that you put over your hand.
Yeah. It's a mesh bag, right?
Yeah. And that's getting the hate mail. And I just don't see, like, when you see steelhead in a river like in Michigan where you'll see a fish, and if you fish every day, so, you know, say you're a big-time guy that you're running, you know, anybody in the Walt Ground, Clusing, or Lynch, or any of those cats back there, Russ, you run the same river, you might do it 2 months straight. Uh-huh. And the runs, you'll see a fish in a run, they're very easy to identify, and you'll catch that one, and you'll see it the next day, and you'll see this thing, or it'll be a hen or whatever, and you'll see a post-spawner going downstream, and there's nothing wrong with them, other than they've been bit the shit out of them. You know, they fight like crazy.
Yeah, it's so
we're worrying about a soft-gloved, my hand with a not even a, I don't even know what you call them. They're just fuzzy. I'd hold that fish and it wouldn't slip out. Take that hook out, gone it goes, right? Just like that. But yet, I'm killing the fish, and then, but when a male bites another male and just rips a chunk out, you'll find those things with cuts in their back a quarter inch deep, just shredded, beat to shit. You see them going downstream. They're on Queer Street. They're going down like, whoa, what's going on with
like
me?
Digging a bed out can't be particularly nice.
You ever see a hen tail at the end of a spawning season? She'll be missing an inch of her tail. Maybe more. She'll be missing into her caudal, into the podunk right in here. She'll be missing meat where they dig. Mm-hmm. And yet, you see him going back to, you see him wave, and you go fish. Like, we used to fish dropbacks, is what they're called. I mean, they eat streamers like a champ, right? Yeah. They're just the fish that are done spawning, they're going back to the lake. And you're just, they were just massively aggressive. Mm-hmm. And you'd see them, they're already healing up.
Yeah.
They're already got, they're already juiced up already.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's just a, I don't know. It's just, it's a tough one. You can, and nobody's ever going to completely agree on it. So it's why we have a democracy. So that's we can disagree.
Okay, so on that point, I want to read this and then say something about it. This is a question from Lewis Baker. He says, he emailed it in. He says, "Hello, my name is Lewis Baker. I love the podcast. Can't wait for it every week on Tuesdays, especially when I don't agree with either Kelly or Braden. I live in Southeast Idaho, and I've seen some huge changes and exponential growth in the use of my home waters. Some good, some bad. Please forgive me for my falling rant. The last thing any of us need are more Karens and homeowners associations in our world. They bother us when we are at our house mowing the lawn, when we are shopping or driving around town, making up rules and regulations that maybe should exist but don't other than in their damn head. Not to mention a list of ethical reasons not to do anything that they themselves have always done but now won't because of self-reflective change of heart. Good God. Now you're telling us that the Karens will be hitting the river too? The River Owners Association will be out there with a stopwatch making sure I don't hold my fish too long. I won't tolerate long-haired hippie liberal, or no, long-haired liberal hippies that just moved out west for their dream job guiding 150 days with Goober clients deciding for me what is acceptable or not. I won't tolerate the visiting angler from Colorado that explains to me that in Colorado that's not how they do it. I can't stand locals educating tourists by being jerks and creating a bad experience when a smile and a hello could soften up the exterior defenses. I don't fish reds. I don't pull fish out of the water if I can help it. I don't high hole or low hole other anglers. I don't hot spot. I haven't taken a picture of a fish out of a net in 10 years. Carts are rolled back to the store and I don't hover."
What's his name?
Lewis.
Lewis.
"What I'm really getting at is that confronting any other person while out recreating, even if necessary, will result in a mind your own damn business speech or worse and not worth it this day and age. If you're going to be dumb, you better be tough. Even if a boxer knows to not get hit in the head for free, it better be worth it. Even a boxer knows to not get hit in the head for free." Apparently I've been hit in the head a couple times. Thanks, Lewis Baker. And then he says, "P.S. complete the puzzle and you win a prize or an extended warranty on your car." And it's T_HTL_NE_.
I think Lewis just quite eloquently said everything I have tried to say in every one of these podcasts.
I've got a pretty good idea how he votes given this outlook. I think he's maybe a little anti-government.
He just sounds to me like a guy who just wants to go do his thing. He's not screwing with anybody. He doesn't need the goddamn Karens of the world coming in and fixing everything.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to have all this stuff, but you only have it because the people that break the fucking rules.
Yeah.
I mean,
so here's,
but you just can't regulate everything to death. If you're going to cheat, you're going to cheat.
Yep.
And then, but the, all these, I loved how he put it. He's not doing that. He doesn't need somebody to tell him what to do. So like, that's what I was getting at. So if we had this, what Tightline said about, you know, mandatory, how would you ever regulate that? Now you got another frickin' rule. It's like everything in our world has a frickin' rule attached to it to make somebody a bug. And this one, particular one, just gives somebody a little badge. It gets to go out there and say, "Hey, I've seen you catch 23 fish. You need to get the hell out of here."
Right.
Right? Well, no.
So what this made me think of, and kind of a little bit of our conversation earlier in this podcast. I listened to this podcast series on Cuba and Fidel Castro called The Real Dictators. It's a great show. But essentially, they bring on a bunch of different experts or, you know, people who had, who kind of lived through the Cuban Revolution and the time under Fidel. And they talked about the socialism, you know, when it got late in Fidel's tenure, things were really rough in Cuba, right? He basically pulled everyone away from their jobs, like their real jobs, to make them work in the sugar plantations. Sugar? Corn. One of them.
Doesn't matter.
But they're trying to set the record for most corn, or what, I think it was sugar, produced. So, you know, that was their big thing, right? And it basically ruined their economy. And then everybody was allotted a certain amount of food, and there's these rules they're supposed to abide by. And you know, it's kind of rough there. What I'm getting at is, what they said is, all of a sudden people started turning on their neighbor, right? Because, you know, one guy works in a, let's say, a sticker factory. And, well, there's a really long line for the doctor, but his son is sick. And he goes, well, doctor, I'll give you, you know, 15 stickers if I can cut the line. And then all of a sudden, every other citizen who they're supposed to be looking out for each other goes, well, that's bullshit. He's making my life harder. And so, you know, with this sort of like increased rules and scarcity of resources, everyone turns on each other. And I think kind of this is kind of what saying. Exactly. It's what he's getting.
We don't need more Karens out there.
More rules.
More home associations. Yeah. More people look. And how do you enforce them anyway?
Right. It's like what you're talking about.
We don't have a freaking warden in our county.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Which is awful.
Yeah. This county's bigger than Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Christ. I mean, it's fishing, for God's sakes. We're fishing. Are you shitting me? If we got to have these fucking rules to go fishing?
Yeah.
I mean, have a good time and shut your freaking mouth.
It's like what we talked about with earlier today when Tight Lines was asking about limiting even catch and release fish. Where you said, well, then all of a sudden someone's going to be calling in saying,
yeah,
so-and-so caught 40, right? And then I'm conflicted because I do think that we do need some sort of structure and rules for people to operate within. But there's a line of how much is too much.
We got a lot of freaking rules.
I don't think we can just, I mean,
we have a lot of rules.
But we used
right
to not,
now.
And like there are.
And everybody got along because you could just dynamite the river and nobody cared.
Yeah, but there's no steelhead run in the Wenatchee now.
Well, yeah, well, that's because you got so many dams on there.
No, it's because everyone killed all the fish. Yeah, they're gone.
Well,
the salmon still make it up.
You
there.
Probably had rules about that.
Well, there are now. It's closed.
You probably did then. Yeah. Well, that's what ends up.
But
that's how this shit ends up. Everybody gets fucked.
Yeah.
How did you fix it? You didn't fix a goddamn thing. You closed the river, right? You can't have a modicum of common sense and say, well, maybe we'll only let this much happen and you'll only get this many days and you'll have this. None of that. Just close, son of a bitch. Everybody ruined. Everybody's fun's done. Yeah, the playground is closed.
But I think it's done in an attempt to fix it, like the Metau, right, which is in central Washington.
Mm-hmm.
It opened for steelhead season last year for the first time in over a decade.
I remember.
Numbers drop down, they shut it down, numbers come back up, they open it up again, right? Like yes, they killed everyone's fun, but it's to be able to try to bring the fun back later on, right? Like without it completely going away. Like this, the Wenatchee steelhead run is gone. It's dead. It's
a lot of the West Coast steelhead runs are gone and dead.
Yeah.
Which is really going to kill the steelhead guys when they start replanting them with those Michigan fish like they've already started.
I'm okay with that.
That aren't real steelhead because they don't go to salt. But yeah.
No, you're right. They're not real steelhead because they don't go to salt. Now, they're really cool fish. They act exactly like steelhead.
They are the exact same thing. I've always wanted to ask you, if I took a white-tailed deer from Michigan, put it in this state, is it still a white-tail?
It's not a Montana white-tail.
Those steelhead came from the McLeod River.
Yeah, I know.
So when they bring them back there, and they're steelhead all over again. But the point being, and then they did it backwards where they went, where a lot of the West Coast did, where they tried doing the planning bullshit. Look at all these beef fish, you know, you're like, what a joke. So instead of just, but the problem is not the fishermen, I don't believe. I don't think they killed all of them. Close off your headwaters, close off the places, you know, close it where they can go spawn. If they could make it there, they'll make it.
Well, that's where I think.
But they did, that's how we do everything. We close it all.
Yeah.
We just stop it, right? Because you can't regulate people.
Yeah.
If there's a way to cheat, we'll cheat.
Well, and that's, this is where I'm conflicted on this, right? Like, less rules, we shouldn't have to limit everything, but like, I'm not sure I believe that people are inherently good. People will get away with a lot.
Quite the contrary.
What?
Quite the contrary.
Yeah, you believe they're inherently evil.
I don't know about evil.
There's bad.
Somewhat diabolical, maybe.
Yeah, I mean.
they're just, if we had seasons, all it would take is, you know, people are always bitching about spawners. Well, if the fish comes out of the ocean, goes up the river, he's on his way to spawn.
Yeah.
So if you kill them all, shame on you. You know, and do you put, if you put no kill on everything and they're still dead, well, then you got to fight. Now you got to
figure out what the other.
We got to figure out what the next thing is. What is happening here? It's like here on Henry's Lake, the guys who fish Henry's Lake blame the ice fishermen for the decline. They don't look at the dissolved oxygen being deprivated from that lake when the weeds are so goddamn thick and they're dying off and the fish go somewhere else. They say, oh, it's the ice fishermen. Oh, okay. But how come they're back in the fall? Did the ice fishermen miss the, why did they all move back in? It's like we always blame the low-hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm.
It's always the easiest. The bait guys.
Yeah.
It's those damn bait guys.
Shit, that's what the Ruby Valley game warden was saying. He's like, his higher up was getting on his ass because he never writes fishing tickets. You know, why don't you ever write fishing tickets? He goes, well, I only run into fly fishermen and they're like really good. They abide by the rules. They read the regulations. They go out and they're not killing fish or they're only within their limit. Like they're, you know, they pinch their barbs where they need to, even though over there, I don't think there's a lot of,
not that I know.
No, but like he goes, oh, it's always the gear guys. And he's not even an angler. He's a hunter. He didn't fish any kind of way, but that's what he
was saying. You know what the guy told me up here? Utah.
Yeah. Utah's low hanging fruit.
That was, he says, I said, what do you look for up here? They're all the spawners are up there.
Yeah.
And he said, Utah.
That's what the warden said about who to look for?
Yeah. Utah plates.
Yeah.
He says, it's simple. I just go, they'll have stringers and they never have the right limit. I wouldn't survive without Utah. Every guy I know from Utah is just like the guy Warden is talking about, those guys.
Yep.
Pinch their barbs, they do all this shit. But I mean, there you go. Then you got somebody you're talking about shit about, okay, it's a state.
Yeah.
I could see if it was, you know, Colorado. How do you like that? Huge. Yeah, no, but I mean, it's all bullshit. When's the last time you went down this river and you saw somebody? It's been 7-8 years since I've seen a creel.
And yeah.
I saw a guy down in the, I saw a guy at Reynolds one day with a creel.
I remember my first year working here.
I mean, he had a fish in it too.
Yeah. Oh, well, there's these Hispanic dudes that came in who spoke like pretty broken English. But they were stoked on fishing, and they saw we had Modelos, and they were real stoked we had Modelos, which was really funny. They bought all of them. They said, can you guys order more? We're like, yeah, we can order more Modelos.
I remember those guys.
But they showed, I was like, so how's the fishing been? Oh, really good. I'm not going to try to do an accent. And they go, oh, really good. And he shows me a picture of a stringer with like 7 or 8 brown trout on it. And I'm like, where were you? And they're like, oh, just down there. I'm like, oh, that's not allowed. Yeah. This is a whole catch and release part. Like, they were fishing bait for brown trout. They clobbered them, of course.
Of course. They just moved up between the lakes. I saw them up there.
Yeah, did they? Yeah.
Totally legal.
Yeah.
So how you guys doing?
There? Yeah.
Just picked up his stringers. Yeah. Good job. So, you know.
Yeah, I feel like we've worn this one down pretty good.
You think? For like 5 months straight, weeks. Yeah.
There's nuance.
Kind of fun.
There's nuance to it.
New rants.
Yeah.
But I think Lewis hit it on the head. I mean, let it I slept.
If you
it's
had
pretty damn good out there. It's really, I mean, you think about our fisheries today, other than a handful of Western, but I think that's mostly dams and diverting water and real shit. I don't think that's fishermen. I think that's pure greed. But if you think about the fishery of today as opposed to 1945, oh my God, it is so much everywhere. Maybe I don't know about all the East Coast stuff, but the mindset, the conservation mindset, the limiting of the kills, the bank restoration, and you know, not taking the meander lines out of river, all the things that were negative that we did, that we corrected for a conservation. I mean, it goes back to Teddy Roosevelt, who was like the ultimate poacher. You know, but then he says, well, you can't just shoot everything and you can't just do this stuff, right? Right. And if you think about it, we've made monumental steps. Mm-hmm. Fly fishing in particular. Mm-hmm. We were the drivers for a lot of this. Just limit your kill. Don't kill your limit. You know, pick up your trash. Do things. Mono bundling. You know, people putting mono in trees because they want to see trees, you know, birds in trees and shit like that. We've been so forward. All you hear is the negative shit. You don't hear all the positive stuff we've done for 5 decades. And well, and a lot of it.
This, I think the same concept applies. Like I took this, I went to a religious school, even though I don't consider myself to be particularly religious. And we had to take a number of theology courses. This was Gonzaga in Eastern Washington. And so I took Hebrew Bible, and then I took a class called God and Evil, which is, you know, how could God exist with the presence of evil? And one of the big things they talked about, Kelly's heard me talk about this before. So I can't remember the name of the philosopher who wrote this piece, but like essentially what they talked about is they wanted to examine the idea, is our world actually evil? And their conclusion was that, no, it's actually the best it's ever been. Like if the advent of, the internet and the information spread, right? We can see these catastrophes happening around the world. And, you know, news networks likes to show that because that's what gets eyes and, you know, garners emotion from people, right? So that's what they show. That's what people watch. And then all of a sudden you think, well, our world is horrible. There's all this death, destruction, and horrible stuff happening. When in reality, like, you know, 300 years ago, this is another point, right? Death is really meaningful nowadays because it happens rarely. Like, right? Like, people used to have 15 kids because only 4 of them would make it to adulthood. Now, our, you know, lifespans are long, mortality rates are much lower, and, you know, you go back a couple hundred years, we are fighting for food. Like you are fighting your neighbor.
Catching a steelhead made you philosophical.
I've always been kind of philosophical, but yes, I now have this.
To the point.
The point is that things probably aren't as bad as they seem. People want to make them seem bad to attract attention and elicit an emotional response from anglers, right? So like, someone once told me, and I got no data to back this up, but they told me that the Wenatchee system died because people killed all the fish. When in reality, it's probably dams, hot water zones that fish can't make it through, like thermal blocks, coastline, like estuary degradation.
Too many houses on the spawning channels.
Yes, houses on the spawning channels.
That aren't channels anymore.
Right. And
they're yards.
Ocean dynamics, you know, either heating of the ocean,
pesticides netting, coming off your
pesticides,
yard.
Pesticides, yes, all these
all
things,
these
right?
They all herbicides,
have
herbicides, yes.
But really what I'm getting at is that maybe things aren't that bad and people are saying they are.
I think it's better than it's ever been in the history of the world.
Exactly.
Even when you have a decline in a fishery, which is a very natural thing.
Yeah, things ebb and flow.
Yeah, they do. And it's the best it's ever been. There's shitholes. There's always been shitholes. But I mean, Jesus, he talked about, you know, people used to, when I moved to Houston in 79, people were always talking about how, boy, you swim in that, in Lake Michigan? And they'd heard one thing about the one time there was a chemical spill and the Detroit River lit on fire or some shit, right? Which I'm sure it happened, it could have, but, you know, that's just like all the green shit, right? All the This country cleaned up everything so quickly. Scrubbers, the acid rain. I mean, we have eliminated, this is the cleanest country in the freaking world. Don't get any credit for it, though. We did it in a 30-year window. And we did it with resources. And everywhere you look, everything you look at, every river, every fishery, every state has been a driving force, and it's all grassroots. Just you and I sitting here saying we should go up and clean this freaking river. And we don't never gets any credit. All it gets is, you know, all the negative shit. You know, who cares? Y'all didn't grow up when there weren't any fish around. That's the problem. You didn't grow up when the shit, when before they had dams that had to do bottom releases, things like that.
Yeah.
I was just reading a 93 magazine, 1993, talking about, arguing about the dam at Ennis Lake. Fly Fisherman, one of the last good magazines or issues they ever did. They started doing all this weird shit. And this was just really good conservation stuff in this magazine. But it's been going on forever. But we have been fighting a good fight forever. Mm-hmm. But we get locked in, like you said. I mean, watch this commercial for Saving the Holocaust Survivors. How many are left? I see the commercial every 5 minutes about the old ladies that are dying. We got to send them money. How many are left? Like you said, it hits your heartstrings. It goes like that. So instead of doing, like, you don't hear the positive come out of this stuff. You know, all you hear is it's the people. There's too many people. They're ruining it. Well, there's a hell of a lot more people picking up trash than there was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I remember when the first, back in the 80s sometime, Umpqua came out with a biodegradable leader package. And I immediately, it wasn't a big, you know, greeny type guy. I think all outdoorsmen, outdoors people are that, right? You don't have to have a label for it. But this biodegradable thing, and I immediately thought of going down to the river on the Boardman River, and every night I'd get down to this one spot, and there'd be like six different plastic wrappers sitting on the ground. You're too damn lazy to pick those up. I don't, and I'd pick them up every time. Mm-hmm. I'd pick every damn thing up I see.
Yeah.
Well, it's one or two people doing the same shit, but the rest of us are cleaning it up, right? And I thought, wow, biodegradable. At least it won't be a piece of plastic flopping around, right? Well, that was kind of cool. And we still see it today. Like, we don't have hardly any leader packages, right? Everybody buys those bulk things.
Yep.
So they don't have that shit around. We do good things in small doses. We're doing it constantly. You know, with just little things. And it's just like this with this rule gig. I mean, for the most part, you don't have to regulate anybody. Especially nowadays. Everybody's no-kill, right?
Yep.
You don't have to regulate anybody. Except that 3% of jack's wagons that we should just heads underwater for a while. And let it go. But we can't do that. No, no due process. Yes, it was. I saw him do it. Game over. Whoa.
That was a good one. All right. Well, let's wrap this one up. Did you prepare with a song of the week?
I did. I got a bunch of them. Now, I just don't remember who I used already, but I even wrote it down.
We can read.
Did I use B.B. King ever?
I don't know. I don't think so.
King. Yes. But I got a bunch of them.
All right, I'm going, it's a parcel song that they do with...
Actually, my favorite B.B. King is him and that guy from YouTube. Or
YouTube.
Bono.
Bono.
Bono, not YouTube. What is it?
YouTube.
YouTube.
Yeah.
YouTube, not... Yeah.
YouTube.
When Love Comes to Town. Those two do that together? Oh, man. Crank it.
I think it was Bono for Halloween one year.
What were you this year? Some chick with huge...
I sent Kelly a photo. there was this photo that went around the internet. A gal named Sydney Sweeney, who's a well-endowed woman, wearing a chainmail dress. And so I moved up to Bozeman on Friday, which was Halloween, and moved into my place. This party I was going to started at 5 p.m. and at 4 p.m. I'm sitting on the couch, just like, I hate dressing up. I don't know what to do.
I think you like dressing up like a girl.
I like a girl, I do, but not like a frog, which is what I was going to go as. And then I saw that photo. I'm like, I could probably do that. So I went to my roommate Maddie sent me to a craft store, and I bought that like chain mail looking stuff and put some big fake boobs under it. It was funny. It was a good one.
And your buddies fill you up?
All of them.
Yeah, figured it
out. A lot of chicks, too. Yeah. Everybody wanted to grab my huge boobs. And the, it's funny, like, I'd say maybe 20% of women recognized who I was. Like, who am I? And a lot of them were just like, oh, chick with huge cans. And I was like, yes, but. And I'd say 85 to 90% of guys knew who I was. And I sent a photo of me.
Even seeing that other picture, I didn't know who you were. So
I
didn't know that was her.
I sent.
Isn't she the chick that did the blue jean thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I sent a photo of me dressed up and of Sydney in her outfit to my family. I said, guess who? Well, I first sent the one of me. I said, guess who? My sister goes, I don't know, Dolly Parton? And immediately her husband's like, yeah, it's Sydney Sweeney. Yeah. Red-blooded man.
There you go.
So my song of the week's Can't Get You Out of My Head. It's covered by Parcels. Really good. One guy in there, he's got a unique voice. It's really cool.
Very good. We beat this one up. Yep. I didn't think I was going to have a voice when we got done with this.
All right, we'll see you next week.
Hope it helps you out.